A review published in this week's The Lancet claims that induced hypothermia is underused in the United Kingdom and in the United States. This practice of deliberately cooling the body is capable of preventing or limiting permanent injuries if it is employed within the first couple of hours of a clinical event. And I'm pleased to introduce and welcome to our show Dr. Cleese Polderman, Department of Intensive Care, University Medical Center, Utrecht, in the Netherlands. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and thanks for having me on your show.
You're very welcome. And this is of particular interest, as I mentioned earlier in the show, because my wife had the hypothermia technique done intensive care here after she had suffered a pulmonary embolus and suffered what we thought was a brain injury. And I had never seen that before and was fascinated by how this in fact preserved her brain function, and she is completely normal now. And I wanted to ask you, what are the initial physiologic and anatomical changes that normally occur from brain injuries and the various types of brain injuries that occur?
Well, if we look at what happens after anoxic injury, that means the brain is deprived of oxygen, the whole brain doesn't get oxygen for a limited period of time, which is probably what happened to your wife with the pulmonary embolism, which also happens when your heart stops beating with a cardiac arrest. And when perfusion of the brain is restored, then, of course, the brain cells have been exposed to not enough oxygen for some time. And we used to think that the damage is done or it's not done. We have to wait and see how it will turn out. But we now know that a lot of processes get started after such a period of hypoxia, and that these processes are what in some patients fatally injures the brain. And hypothermia, that's where hypothermia comes in. If you use hypothermia in the hours after such an event, in some patients, you can slow or completely prevent these processes from happening, and so you can completely prevent permanent brain injury. So this doesn't work all the time, but it works in some patients, and it works actually probably in the patients who've had the least amount of hypoxia.
What is the basic science that looked at the processes that caused the brain injury and how hypothermia was determined that it can preserve brain function and anatomy?
Well, the processes which happen after ischemia are actually quite complex. There are about 20, which I won't list all of them, but
sure.
just a couple of examples. There is an inflammatory response. So the white blood cells go into the brain, and when a brain cell is damaged, they kill that brain cell, whereas in some patients, they are salvageable. There is a sort of reperfusion reaction, which can aggravate this inflammatory response. A lot of other things going on. And what hypothermia does, it dampens down this response. And this gives some brain cells the chance to recover. So this process and a number of others are slowed or completely prevented. And this then gives the brain the chance to recover from this post-hypoxic injury. Now, if the injury is too long or too serious, then this doesn't work, at least not with the amount of time that we've tested it so far. This is 24 hours, which is sort of the time that you can do this with very few side effects. And the next, next couple of years, we'll have to show if we continue this therapy longer and if we're able to start it more quickly, that we might be able to help more patients with the same therapy.
Now, with regards to the review in The Lancet, what was the evidence that you investigated to look at outcomes and, again, in terms of the patients that tended to respond better than others?
Well, the review was about a lot of, it reviewed the evidence for the use of hypothermia in a whole range of diseases, not just cardiac arrest or pulmonary embolism, but also, for example, traumatic brain injury, stroke, subarachnoid hemorrhage, which is a special form of stroke. There is a whole range of other topics where it's been less well studied, but where the initial evidence is promising. There is some animal evidence just from animal experiments and some initial tests on one or two patients, so that's very weak still, but that it may protect also from spinal cord injury if you apply it very rapidly after the event. There's been this case of this American football player, Ken Everett, recently in the States, where they actually tried this therapy, which well, it's very experimental for this indication, but, well, they at least they felt they had some success in that individual. So these are all stories which show the promise of this therapy, but for that type of indication, it needs to be better studied.
Mm-hmm.
For cardiac arrest, we're on much more solid ground. There have been a number of well-conducted studies, randomized controlled trials, as well as a whole number of implementation studies. So these are studies that a hospital started using this, and they looked at how they were doing before and after starting use of hypothermia. And every single one of those studies found that they did better when they started cooling these patients.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say at least for cardiac arrest patients, I think we're on very solid ground in saying that this really should be used in every hospital for this particular category of patients. So, and that's not everybody. It's patients with witnessed arrest and an initial rhythm of ventricular fibrillation, ventricular tachycardia.
Mm-hmm.
And there is also some evidence showing that this works really in all types of witnessed arrest. So that's when somebody collapses and somebody is present and is able to call an ambulance quickly so that, well, the downtime is not too long. For the other patients, so, well, we don't know. We have to find out. We have to do proper studies for that.
So in other words, it's people who are having acute hypoxic brain injuries, either as a result of a cardiac arrest or, as you mentioned, pulmonary embolus or something that disrupts blood flow temporarily, but the person has access to care very quickly.
Yes. Another example of this situation, a very different category of patients, but a very similar mechanism of disease, is newborn babies who suffer oxygen deprivation during birth.
Mm-hmm.
This can happen for various reasons. Protracted birth, if the umbilical cord gets disconnected, some other reasons. So if you treat these babies with hypothermia immediately after the event, so within the first few hours, you also get a significant improvement in less brain injury. And these studies actually are even better than the cardiac arrest patient studies. There have been three of them, which are all well-run trials. And they've all shown the same thing some of these babies, you can prevent permanent brain injury. And the good thing about this therapy in this category of patients is it's kind of an all or nothing thing. If you make a recovery, you appear to make a full recovery. So it's not that you have more people ending up in nursing homes,
right,
for example, which used to be a fear that you might save the lives of these patients, but will not get full recovery of brain function. What seems to happen is that either you protect or you don't protect. So there is no increase of risk of ending up in a nursing home.
That's literally a binary result. It's either yes or no.
Yeah, that's the way it looks.
Now, is this being adopted as a standard of care in most countries? There was mentioned that the United Kingdom and the United States are not using it as much as perhaps they should, whereas other countries are. Is there a reason why this is the case?
Yes, well, the reason why I wrote that is that there have been surveys. We ourselves carried out a survey in a number of European countries and found a range of use of hypothermia for this particular indication from more than 90% in northern countries, Scandinavian countries, down to 28-30% in the UK and Germany. And this is confirmed by a survey done in the UK, only in the UK by UK physicians. There have been surveys in the United States in 2005 and 2006, well, with really very low usage of hypothermia. And I think it's probably better now, but those are the latest numbers we have, and I'm sure it's still way under 50%. And why that is, well, I don't know, really. It's hard to explain. There have been discussions about hypothermia for a long time. It was used for a while in the 1950s for a number of indications, and it fell out of favor because it was difficult to manage in those days. So this was without intensive care in a regular ward. So the side effects were, quite severe, and, well, they still are, but in this day and age, they are much easier to manage if you put the patient in an intensive care unit. Certainly for the cardiac arrest for 24 hours, it's not that difficult to do. So for other indications like traumatic brain injury, it's a little bit more complicated. But maybe it's the fear of the unknown. Maybe it's the fear of getting blamed if the patient still has a bad outcome, that this new therapy gets blamed. Now you're asking me to speculate on something which really is...
Right.
Well, I think everybody for that indication just should be doing it.
Well, Dr. Polderman, I'd like to thank you very much for taking the time to discuss the process of hypothermia and treating acute traumatic brain injuries, people who have had cardiac arrest, and at least anecdotally from my point of view with what has happened with my wife and how, again, it was a yes or no, and she completely recovered. It seemed to help her tremendously. And I thank you very much for taking the time to discuss this with us today.
Okay, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me on your show, and thanks for sharing my enthusiasm.
All the best.
Okay.
Bye-bye now. Dr. Cleese Polderman is from the Department of Intensive Care, University Medical Center, Utrecht, Netherlands, publishing this week in The Lancet, Hypothermia, Lowering Body Temperature to Treat Acute Traumatic Brain Injuries. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin, and you're listening to Sunday House Call.
You're listening to Dr. Barry Dworkin on Sunday House Call.